Hello, this is your host, Jigme Kyaltseng, and welcome to the Jigme Kyaltseng Show, a podcast where I sit down as speakers, singers, songwriters, musicians, sports personalities, actors, radio broadcasters, and a slew of many other professionals from a broad range of fields. This news conversation, former Blue Jays broadcaster, host of the Deep Left Field podcast, and baseball columnist for Toronto Star, Mike Wilner, talks about the upcoming Blue Jays season, his experience at the University of Toronto, career in broadcasting, and more. Now, with that being said, I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I mean, it's a pleasure to be able to talk to you today, as also I know a fellow broadcaster yourself and a fellow radio a budding radio person as well, who's done a lot of work in terms of the Blue Jays, and you've done a lot of stuff for the Toronto Star, and we're gonna get into that. But I mean, there's gotta be a lot of things sort of happening for the Blue Jays this off season. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say happening, but there's gotta be something behind the scenes that could be happening that we don't know of. And it's been an interesting, I guess the word interesting is the right thing to use in terms of describing the off season that the Blue Jays are having right now, because they lost out on Shohei Ohtani. I think that was the biggest disappointment of the off season. They lost out on Juan Soto, when they could have had the chance to acquire him. I just sort of the thing that I keep going back to about this Blue Jays team is, okay, so if they lose out on both those guys and you're looking for a DH and you're looking for sort of the players that can get you out of that rut that they've been in for the last couple of years in the playoffs, where you basically had a shortened sort of playoff series with wild card teams, and you're still not able to break through any of those series. I guess to you, when you look at this Blue Jays off season, if you could use one word to describe it, what would that word be, I guess?
That was a lot there. First of all, let me say that I think you're the first person who's called me a budding broadcaster in probably 40 years or so, maybe 35, but I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I mean, missing out on Ohtani, you're absolutely right. The most disappointing piece of the offseason, which is crazy when you consider that 2 weeks before Ohtani signed with the Dodgers, no Blue Jays fan even had him on their radar, was even considering that they might have the opportunity to sign him. But they were right in there, and they, for a day there, it felt to all of us like it was actually going to happen, which made the disappointment that much more crushing. But I don't think that they missed out on Soto because they were pursuing Ohtani. I think that front offices are huge and large, and there are dozens of people working on a lot of different things, so they're always working on multiple things at the same time. They didn't get Soto because they didn't want to give up the package that the Yankees gave up for 1 year of Juan Soto. And maybe if they had made a trade for Soto, then they pull back on the pursuit of Ohtani. But I don't think that happens either. But I think one word, there are a couple of one words to describe the Blue Jays off season so far as we sit here on February 1st. Disappointing is one, underwhelming is another. I think for some fans, it's infuriating is the word. We knew what the Blue Jays needed. We watched them last year play a very frustrating form of offense, play a very unexciting kind of baseball. We saw that they tried to build a team around pitching and defense, and while they did, it wasn't nearly as successful as it ought to have been. So we sort of expected them to try to load up offensively in the offseason, and they have not done that. So yeah, it's been a very very disappointing off season, but the truth is that the players they have are still very good, and the team that they have is still very good. And if they can avoid pitching injuries like they did last year, if they get a bounce back from Alex Manoah and from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., they are a 95 win team. So we'll see what happens.
Of course. And I remember when Vladdy sort of first said that you've only seen the trailer, but this year you're going to see the movie. And that didn't happen. And
Wasn't a very good movie last year.
it definitely did not seem like a movie, maybe a cheap movie if you would describe it as. But I mean, when I look at this off season and you know their needs and you know what they've been looking for, and you see Ross Atkins sort of still working the phone, seeing what's out there, what could they do to salvage this off season and make it a decent one at least. The thing that strikes me the most is, I guess, the fans' overreaction in terms of, and I guess, like, I understand fans sort of the anger and the angst of wanting to get news and wanting to get the moves that they've been asking for. But at the same time, I feel like there is the fault in Blue Jays fans or fans in general, where you sort of overreact on certain things a little too much, I guess, in terms of, okay, this is why players don't want to come here to play baseball or play sports in general, because of the pressure that this market builds on players itself. And they know that pressure is privilege, but at the same time, there's an extent and a level to which you don't go towards, where you say, okay, you criticize the smallest of details in an athlete's career, and then you make it a big of a deal that it shouldn't have been that big of a deal. And I guess that's just an interesting thing that I've learned over the course of Toronto sports history. And you look at the Maple Leafs for specifically, like, did you ever think that the Maple Leafs were going to be a team that's going to win seasons that were record-breaking seasons? No, I don't think so. The Leafs have had seasons where they've been a disappointment. They've been, really have. And I think what you've learned through the free agents that have come and gone from Toronto, that they've talked about the pressure as a factor in why they left Toronto, and they wanted a smaller market so they don't have to be involved in those interviews where they put the microphone in your face and ask you about, like, how do you feel after a loss and stuff like that, and the pressure that goes into that. And I'm using the word pressure a lot because I think that really is what describes and encapsulates this Toronto market. About enticing free agents and enticing the big names to come here and play for your team. When you look at players like Shohei Ohtani, for example, and you look at Juan Soto, and you look at Justin Turner, who's now been officially been a Blue Jay now, which is great news for Blue Jays fans. But when you look at those three names, and you look at JD Martinez, and you look at all the other names out there that still have not gotten teams yet, what do you sort of say to Blue Jays fans in terms of their patience level? Because I think that's something that really intrigues me, I guess.
Well, let's start with the pressure thing. And I think that's valid for hockey. Absolutely. Toronto is a huge hockey market. Toronto is hockey. It's insatiable, the fans' appetite for information, for details. And, you know, the advent of social media means that the people who normally would not be able to get to a player now can. If that player reads their mentions, which is never a good idea for a professional athlete, regardless. So I do think that that's valid for hockey and for the Maple Leafs. And yet, you know, they've managed to put a very good team together for a number of years that has not been good in the playoffs. But that's a whole other thing. I don't think that pressure is a factor in Toronto. I don't think that players, baseball players, or sorry, for baseball, I don't think the baseball players see Toronto as a high pressure market. I'm not even sure they see it as a particularly large market. But, you know, when you look over the course of the last five off seasons, this is the first one when the Blue Jays have not landed one of the top three available free agents in the market. So there's no argument to be made that high-priced big name free agents don't want to come play in Toronto or see that, you know, it's too much pressure playing here. Shohei Ohtani is going to be a magnet for media coverage wherever he is. And Los Angeles, you know, is the biggest city or the second biggest city in the United States. And he gets a ton of attention there and a ton of attention from media from the Far East as well. So wherever he was going to go, he knows the deal. So no, I don't think that that has anything to do with anything. I mean, they just signed Hyunjin Ryu and George Springer and Kevin Gausman. They've been playing at the top of the market for a long time, with no reluctance at all from the players to be here. As far as this off season and what they can do to make the fans happy, to get the fans excited, I really don't think that there's anything. Like, there's nothing, there's legitimately nothing they can do to turn this into a strong off season. Even if they were to sign Cody Bellinger and JD Martinez tomorrow, which I don't think is going to happen, I mean, it makes it a more successful off season, assuming that you're getting the 2023 Cody Bellinger and not the 2020 to 2022 Cody Bellinger. It's still not Ohtani, and that's what we thought we were getting back in December. So, yeah, I hope they're not done. I hope they bring in another bat. I'm not that certain that they will, but regardless, there's nothing they can do to make this offseason a success in the eyes of the fans. What's going to have to happen is that they're going to have to start the season well, and they're going to have to win. And what's going to get people excited is when they, when the Maple Leafs get knocked out of the playoffs and people open up the sports pages or look at their phone to see what the standings are, what's going to get people excited is if the Blue Jays are 17 and 11 and in first place, as opposed to being, 15 and 13 and trying to get some solid consistency and strong play going. That's the only thing. I don't think Blue Jays fans are going to get excited about this team until May at the earliest.
For sure. And also, I also want to mention how I've heard Steve Phillips when they were talking about when Shohei Ohtani was still a free agent out there, and Blue Jays were very much knocking on that door and very much in the race to sign him. I remember Steve Phillips sort of mentioned this, and I really admired the way he sort of spoke about the Blue Jays. And he said about, okay, if Shohei Ohtani were to join the Dodgers, even though it might seem as a good fit to him, it wasn't, because he said that Shohei, if he went to the Dodgers, he's not playing for Shohei's brand. He's going to play for the Dodgers brand, and it's not going to be good for baseball, because if he went to Toronto, his brand would probably be to represent Asia, and he would build his own brand here and his own identity in the city of Toronto, and playing for the best fans in baseball, which is the Blue Jays fans. And I think branding is also important and plays a role in terms of a move like that to a different, I guess, a different part of the league in Toronto. And I guess in the AL East, moving from the Angels to Toronto would have been the more ideal move for Shohei Ohtani, even though, yeah, the Dodgers have money to spend and they can throw it out at any free agent that becomes available. But do you feel like when it comes to branding, do you feel like that plays a critical role in terms of where a player prefers to go to, I guess?
I really don't know how to answer that because I'm not sure I understand what branding means. I mean, if you're trying to build your brand, you're trying to, pave the way for you to be successful regardless of what you do and, regardless of how your tenure of whatever you're doing at the moment goes. But is there really a need for Shohei Ohtani to be worried about branding? I mean, he just got $800 million. So he doesn't have to worry about anything after baseball or after anything. So I don't know that there's a concern for him to build his brand. I think for him, it was about where he was the most comfortable, plain and simple. I think the Blue Jays and the Dodgers offered him the same amount of money, over the same term. He could have come to Toronto and been the face of a franchise, to help put them over the top. Or he could have gone to Los Angeles to turn a 109 win team into a 112 win team. And he chose to go to Los Angeles, where he's comfortable, where he likes living, and more power to him. Look, I'm all for professional athletes, A, getting every cent they can possibly get, and two, playing in exactly the place they want to play. So regardless of what Steve Phillips thinks, Shohei Ohtani is the one who matters, and he's the one who thinks that it was ideal for him to play with Los Angeles for the Dodgers. And you know, he doesn't have to worry about anything, because he's not only is he set up for life, six generations of his family at least are set up for life as well. And you know, he wins. He has won.
For sure, and I guess this also just encapsulates also or ties into another thing that I want to talk about. And of course, Bo Bichette was talking recently on the Blair and Barker podcast and Blair Barker show, and he was talking about sort of the accountability now, and saying that there's no excuses. And I want to read the quote to you, and just I want to get your perspective on what he said. He said, "At the end of the day, we're not a young team anymore. The whole excuse of growing and learning and all that, it's out the window. It's time to be grown. I think we've been through enough experience at this point. Not to say what we've gone through isn't great experience, but saying we're learning, saying we're growing and that kind of stuff, I think that's over. It's time to get it done. We've talked a lot about how good we are. We've said things like that plenty of times. From the team as a whole or as individuals separately, it's just time to put the work in and see what we're capable of." When you hear a guy like that now, that is saying that he's putting the pedal down and he's saying, "Okay, enough is enough here. We can't be talking about excuses. Like we know we've said this multiple years in a row. We're growing and we're learning. We're learning and we're growing." And you heard that from so many Toronto teams so far. In the history of the sports and the history of this market, the same old excuse over and over again. And now seeing Bo sort of step up and say, "Okay, we can't be saying that anymore. It's time to put the money where your mouth is and say, you know, this is the year. If there's any time to prove people wrong, it's this year. And even though we've lost out on the biggest of free agents, we still believe this team can win with the pieces they have now." And it seems like he's doubled down on it with that quote. And he's saying that it's time. You know, what else do we have there to lose? You know, everybody thinks that we're not the favorites to win, and certainly right for them to believe that. But what do you make of Bo Bichette's comments? Because it seems like that's a player that seems like he's getting tired of the narrative going around with this Blue Jays team, but they can't finish in the playoffs and they can't finish in the biggest of moments, I guess.
I mean, I wouldn't expect anything less from Bo. That's who he is. He said the same things last year, you know, because he doesn't believe in any excuses, and he didn't never believed in the idea of they're young and learning. He's 26 now, and Vlad's gonna be 25, or I think their birthdays are in March. But on opening day, you know, that they're not kids anymore. They've been to the playoffs three times. They haven't won a single game yet. So, you know, it's good to hear, but it's also completely unsurprising to hear. It's interesting that you talked about the Blue Jays having the reputation of not being able to win when it matters. I don't know that that's the reputation that they have, but I do know that that's the reputation that they did have going into the 1992 season as well. You know, before they won their first World Series, the Blue Jays were a team of chokers, a team that couldn't get it done, a team that had been in the playoffs three times and not been able to advance. And look, that's just going to be who you are until you win. Peyton Manning couldn't win the big game until he won the big game. John Elway couldn't win the big game until he won back-to-back Super Bowls in his mid-30s. The idea, the notion that a team or a person just can't win when it matters, doesn't hold until their careers are over, because you can't win when it matters until you win when it matters, and almost nobody does it the first time. And the Blue Jays, yeah, to be 0-6 in playoff games in the Bichette Guerrero era is not a good look. But the playoffs are such a crapshoot anyway. I think it's wonderful what he said, and I would have been surprised if he had said anything else. But ultimately, it doesn't mean anything until October. And as much as that's a great quote, and last year's, 2021, 2022 was the trailer, 2023 is going to be the movie, was also a great quote. Look, there's another team on the other side that's trying to beat you. The other guys drive, other pitchers drive nice cars too. So you can only do so much, but there's no reason to believe that the Blue Jays shouldn't be a playoff team again. Hopefully this time they're able to load up at the deadline, which is something everybody tried to do and couldn't do last year. And they can get a little bit better. But they've still got the pieces to win. Let's just see if they do.
And also something else that also sticks out to me about free agency in general, or enticing big names specifically, you see a lot of this talk about also, well, does the prettiest of names on the trade board, does that really matter in terms of sports? Because to me, when I look at the prettiest of names, and you look at the big names like Ohtani, and you saw Soto, and we can repeat their names over and over again. But to me, when I look at Toronto teams and I look at who they're attracted towards most, and yeah, people can say the big names, but really what matters is those depth players. You need depth in spades in order to win in the playoffs, and you need someone that can come in and be that leader in that bullpen, or someone in that locker room to speak up when it matters, and to shake up the guys here and say, okay, we're not out of this. We're not out of this. We can definitely pull ourselves out of this hole and win series and win games in the biggest of times. I guess, does depth matter more than the enticing big players to sign for your team in the playoffs, I guess?
I don't think so. I mean, I think in hockey, yeah, that stuff matters. But I don't think I think depth matters less in the baseball playoffs than it matters in the regular season. The things that allow you to win over 162 games don't matter as much in the short season, a short series of the playoffs with the extra off days and things like that. You need to make it to the playoffs, you probably need 8 to 12 starting pitchers and 10 to 15 relief pitchers. To win in the playoffs, you can win in the playoffs with two strong starting pitchers and four good relievers, assuming they stay healthy. I think depth matters less. And I think that motivation and that rah-rah, hey everybody, we can do this. I don't think that matters in baseball at all. I think baseball is one of those games, right? It's unlike hockey, basketball, football. You can't take the ball away from the other guy, right? In baseball, there are no battles in the corners to win, right? There are no loose balls to want more and out hustle the other guy for. You get your turn to hit, they get their turn to hit. Baseball's not a game that you can succeed at by trying harder. In fact, that often makes it more difficult. It's a try easier sport, and the more loose and relaxed you are, the better your chances of succeeding. So yeah, I don't want to stick a pin in the theory, but I don't believe any of that as far as baseball goes. And as far as the shiny and best guys, look, you don't need your best players to be your best players in the playoffs. You have there are always these unexpected heroes who show up, but your best players still have to be good for you to be successful in the playoffs. And the more really good players you have, the better your chances of success.
Talking about success, I mean, you've had a lot of success in your career, and I want to go right back to the days where you sort of went to U of T, and you sort of had this. You didn't at, I guess at any point, there was never any point during your time at U of T where you thought that you would go into broadcasting as a career, and sort of you thought that you would do, you get a Bachelor of Commerce and become an accountant. But when you sort of got that call from 680 News or something about the Blue Jays, and saying that you got that call to do the Blue Jays broadcasting role, what went through your head when you first heard that and got that opportunity?
Well, those are very different pieces of the timeline. So, yeah, well, I started at the University of Toronto with the intention of getting a Bachelor of Commerce and becoming an accountant or a lawyer or something like that. And I started working at the university radio station my first year. But yes, even after I graduated, I didn't think that I would have a career in broadcasting. But I went after it. I managed to get a job with the Welland Pirates in 1989 and called games for them. Then I sort of went back to school and didn't do any baseball again until 95. And that was when I got the offer from 680 News in 1995 to do sports updates and do reporting and all of that, and that was fantastic, and I was really excited, and it was great. It was great to get to cover the Blue Jays, to get to go to like the first ever Raptors game and the last game at Maple Leaf Gardens and the first game at the ACC and cover those events and things like that. But even then, you're wondering and you're making $10 an hour and wondering if this is a viable career path. And I used to get a ride home from a weekend shift with one of the newscasters at 680, and every time he would drop me off, he would always say, it's not too late to go to dental school. And he was probably right, as it turned out, because the odds were very much against me. But then when Scott Ferguson left the Fan, and they got me, they brought me in, and eventually it took about a month of back and forth and interviews, and they offered me that job to cover the Jays for the Fan. It was spectacular, but at that time they didn't have the rights to the broadcast. But then Rogers bought the team, Rogers bought the Fan, and I remember I was on my way down to spring training in 2002, and I drove down to Florida, and I was driving with my wife and my 5-month-old baby, who's now 22, and I got a phone call somewhere in Georgia from Nelson Millman, who was the program director at the Fan, and he said we just got the rights back and that I was going to be the pre and post game guy, and it was unbelievable. Like, I never it's unimaginable. And then to get to do play by play for the Blue Jays, first time was in 2003, for just one inning, and then I probably didn't get to do it again for another 10 years. It's selling it short to say it was a dream come true, because it was an unreachable dream come true. Like, people like me aren't supposed to be able to do that. I didn't have a father who was in the business like so many other broadcasters. I didn't have any contacts. I didn't know anyone. I just worked, and I worked. And I never said no, to my detriment sometimes. And I did good work that got noticed and rewarded. And yeah, I mean, nobody born in Toronto had ever broadcast a Blue Jays game on the radio till I did it. It really was an incredible and completely unexpected and looking back, I still it's an unbelievable thing that happened. And It's too bad the way it ended. It would it's you know it shows how cruel and heartless the business can be. You only need one person to really like you to get a job. You only need one person to really not like you to lose a job. And unfortunately that's what happened. And the dream was ripped away, but I did it. You know, I got to do it for a few years, and it was so incredible, unfathomable that I got the opportunity to do that.
Course, and that story is not only amazing but also like it's pretty similar to mine's, where like I have nobody in the business as well, and here I am doing a podcast where you're absolutely right, you just need that one person to show that belief in you and say that you can do that, man. Like you can do it as a career if you really wanted it. It's not going to be the fanciest of jobs. You're not going to like it the first time around. But as soon as you sort of get used to that feeling of not liking it, but it's at the end of the day, it's totally worth it because people are going to see that you've got the relentlessly hardworking attitude. You can come in and do what you're told to do, and then get the opportunities and get rewarded for it. And I guess that just went straight into how your career began and now where you are today with the success that you've had. And obviously, I remember my days at Humber where, I was just sitting in that classroom. I was like, what am I doing here? And how did I get into radio? And it all started in high school, when I knew I had a love for podcasting. I wanted to talk to people. I want to interview people. And I said, okay, so how do I do that? And one of my vice principals of the high school, who's now one of my good friends, and he basically, we cleaned out a whole storage room inside of a classroom that was full of junk, and they were not using it. So we were like, okay, we're gonna stay after school late night and see what we can do and clean it up and if we can turn it into a radio station. So we cleaned it out and stayed late after school, and we got rented out some stuff from Long McQuaid, and off we went. And I was the main host of that show, and interviewing people and getting my feet wet and getting experiences early on, and then I took that straight into college for radio, and now here I am doing a podcast and chatting with people like you and so many others that I've had the pleasure of doing. So I mean, I guess it just correlates, as simple as what you said. You need that one person to show that belief, and here we both are now doing something that we both love to do. And isn't that just such a coincidence where it's just a whole career, and you got to find what interests you. And you talked about that in your University of Toronto sort of outlook in terms of your career, and your advice that you shared to those U of T students or future university students, where you said you just got to find what interests you, and if it's something that is interesting, then chase after it. You got to take a dip in that pool and see what happens. But I mean, was there sort of that one person on the radio that you sort of looked up to?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you just said a whole big mouthful. I would say that I've never done a job in this business that I didn't like. I've never not looked forward to going in. So I don't think you have to do things that you don't like in order to get where you want to be. And I think you have to make sure you're not letting people take advantage of you either, which is something that happens a lot in this business. But yeah, I mean, I looked up to Tom Cheek my whole life, the original voice of the Blue Jays, and you know, I listened to him on the radio all the time, and when I got to meet him, and he was as genuine and gracious and wonderful. You know, it's so sad that we lost him so early. He was only 65 years old when he passed away from the brain cancer, and it I'm you know I feel. Like I really missed out only getting to work with him for 3 years. But the experience was just incredible. When your heroes can disappoint you a lot of the time, but when you meet someone who was a hero of yours and they are everything you hoped they would be and more, I mean, that's just it's just amazing. And to be able to sit in the seat that he sat in and to be able to do the job that he did, even for only, you know, 1/10 of the time that he did it is it's an incredible honor that I got to have.
Absolutely. Well, we've reached the end of our time together, but it's been such a pleasure, and thank you so much for speaking with me, and it's just been an absolute honor. So thank you.
Hey, look, it's my pleasure. I was in your shoes 35 years ago. And I was always thrilled when someone who was established in the business would come on and guest with me. So I'm very, very happy to pay it back this way, and I'm sure that you'll pay it back and pay it forward down the road.
For sure. And so I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Mike Wilner. He's the former Blue Jays broadcaster. He's the host of the Deep Left Field podcast and baseball columnist for the Toronto Star. You can reach Mike on all of his socials. And if you enjoy this episode, you'd like to help support the podcast, feel free to share with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating or review to catch all the latest from me. You can follow the show on all social media platforms. I've been your host, Shane McKeltzing. Thanks for tuning into the show.